This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Some of the most controversial literary censorship trials of our century were over books published by my guest Barney Rossett. He ran Grove Press for 35 years. This is what PEN, the International Writers Organization, said when they gave him an editing award in 1988. By publishing Beckett, Genet, Ionesco, and Rob Grier, Rossett introduced us to the European avant-garde. By publishing William Burroughs, John Retchie, and Malcolm X, he offered us startling underground images of American life. By publishing The Unexpurgated Lady Chatterley's Lover and the long-banned Tropic of Cancer, he risked imprisonment to challenge our anti-obscenity laws. He gave us back a reader's civil rights. Rossett left Grove Press in 1985, but he's not finished with publishing or with controversy. His new company, Blue Moon Books, is currently under attack for publishing Victorian and neo-Victorian erotica. At Grove Press, Rossett published books that other people wouldn't dare to publish. I asked him if his choices were a reflection of his personal taste or based more on his social and political interests and his interest in challenging obscenity laws.
Well, I think it was both of those things. Plus, a very important thing, which is what is available. I mean, when I started publishing, I most definitely would have liked to have published Hemingway and Faulkner and Fitzgerald, but they were already published. So they were eliminated. So that's an important thing to remember. The books I published, which I felt were an affront to obscenity laws, I also happen to like very much as books.
Have a lot of people misunderstood you over the years and sent you a lot of not very good pornography thinking, oh, it's Grove Press, they'll love to publish this?
Yes, indeed. Great amounts. But also great amounts of other things equally bad that did not fit under that category.
Now, today you have a new publishing company called Blue Moon Press. What kinds of books are you publishing with that?
Well, that emanated from something I had finally christened at Grove Press as the Victorian Library, which originally started out with Victorian books like Man with the Maid and My Secret Life, and went on from there until we began receiving new manuscripts.
This is Victorian erotica or pornography.
In a Victorian spirit of that time. And then it was sort of easy to get a grip on controlling that particular group of books, whatever. And so when I left Grove, I thought the easiest thing for me, the simplest road, was to start again with those books and try to introduce into it gradually contemporary literature.
The titles that you're publishing with Blue Moon are titles like Lustful Memoirs, The Rites of Sodom, Professor Spender, and The Sadistic Impulse by authors like Anonymous. I mean, some of the books are written by Anonymous. Why is that?
Well, that actually isn't my doing. The Anonymous is quite accurate and true of the Victorian writers. We don't know who wrote My Secret Life, and we don't know who wrote Man with the Maid and a number of other books. But that was sort of a commercial channel that I was routed into, actually, by the chains. I have authors with names, both real and pen names. But I was told by the chains that, no, it was much better to put Anonymous on the books. And so I now think foolishly, I did that. They said, well, that way they can be grouped together. You could see them all. People go in the store, get them, even though these books wildly differ. So I did that until the chains were frightened out of buying.
Well, Donald Wildman has, he's one of the conservative Christian lobbyists, and his group had petitioned Walden Books, one of the chains, to remove their books, to remove your books from their stores.
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually did remove
they
books.
They did, indeed.
I wonder if you think that chains are more vulnerable to pressure groups or to censorship, because if you hit someone in power and convince them, then you've got bookstores across the whole country responding.
Well, I certainly think they are, and it's always been a great fear of mine. that this exact thing would happen. People have the idea that one of the terrible dangers in publishing is conglomerates owning the publishing companies. I've never really subscribed to that idea because there is always another fool like myself with a little money who'll start publishing, no matter how many or how few conglomerates there are. But when the bookstore chains, doing both something good and bad, good in opening up many new bookstores in places that didn't have any before, and bad being that they were all under one control, and that control wasn't even necessarily the book business, as seen with Walden, which is owned now by Kmart. In this case, this Reverend Wildman and the American Family Association, whatever that is, threatened Kmart that if they didn't stop letting their subsidiary Walden sell specifically our books, they would be boycotted. And the first thing that happened was Walden, Kmart, caved in. I think with a tiny fraction of people, but they did. And so it's devastating.
Is this a battle you thought had already been won?
No. No, no. I never thought any battle has been won, but it takes different forms. This is one that I think we're singularly unequipped to deal with. You have to have a constituency, it seems to me, in this kind of a situation. And I don't know where the constituency is in my case. I certainly know where the other constituency is.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Barney Rossett, who for about three decades owned Grove Press and published some very controversial and groundbreaking books, including Lady Chatterley's Lover, Naked Lunch, Last Exit to Brooklyn, books by Genet and Kerouac, and many others. What was the first book that you published that ended up getting taken to court over obscenity charges?
Lady Chatterley's Lover, and that was very deliberate, clear idea that actually, we planned a battle plan, which was to get the post office to take action against us as opposed to local government or whatever, so that we could keep it as simple as possible and win or lose at a federal level. And it turned out that way, and we won.
So the Attorney General, I think, accused it of being smutty pornography.
He was the Postmaster General.
I'm sorry, I meant to say the Postmaster General. Mm. What were the grounds that you argued that case in court?
Well, my grounds has always been that anything can be published. In this case, judicial or legal wisdom was that it should be argued on the basis that it was a good book and therefore not subject to any kind of censorship. And on that basis, we won very clearly.
The trial, I think, demonstrated that Lady Chatterley's Lover had redeeming literary merit. Did you feel that books should have to prove that they had redeeming literary or social
value
in order to exist?
I certainly don't think so.
And why not?
I think that if you have freedom of speech, you have freedom of speech.
Was there a period in which you or writers and publishers who you knew were testifying about a book's literary and social merits, even if you didn't really like the book very much, but you felt that the book had the right to exist, so you would testify on the grounds that were needed?
Well, I mean, I don't think that happened with our books, but what I was really aiming at was publishing Tropic of Cancer, which I had read in 1940 when I was a freshman at Swarthmore College, and it made an enormous impression on me, and I kept it in the back of my mind for many years that someday, somehow, that book would be aired to the rest of the world. So my way of getting to Tropic of Cancer was through Lady Chatterley's Lover.
How did you use Lady Chatterley's Lover to publish Henry Miller's book?
To show that a book of literary merit, whatever, could be published, and go from there to showing that Henry Miller had the same merit. But I felt that it would be more difficult to start with Miller.
Because he didn't
Lawrence.
Have the kind of literary track record
right.
that Lawrence did.
That's right. And it worked out that way.
So how difficult was it to prove for Henry Miller?
Very difficult.
What did you have to do?
There we had hundreds of court cases. Hundreds in one state, I mean. 11 in one city. It was a very strange chaos. But ultimately, it worked out all right.
What spoke to you about the book? Why did you want to publish it so much?
Well, when I read it, the sex part of it I didn't even notice, which is amazing. To me, it was a tract about the United States, and it went along with another book called The Air Conditioned Nightmare. It's sort of funny because there wasn't much air conditioning then, but Miller had a very unusual and cynical viewpoint of modern American life of his time, of the 30s, 40s. I was living in it. Everything he said struck something inside of me, excited me, made me want to be creative and do things like run away from Swarthmore. But other things, I thought it was a marvelous expression of one human being.
An expression of alienation.
Of alienation, I think is a good way to put it. And so I just remember that from 1940 until whenever it was we published in the 60s.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Barney Rossett, who for about three decades owned Grove Press, and Grove was best known for publishing controversial and groundbreaking authors, people like Henry Miller, D.H. Lawrence, Jean Genet, Samuel Beckett, Jack Kerouac. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about publishing. This is Fresh Air. Barney Rossett is my guest, the former owner of Grove Press. Let's go back to the very beginning when you started to publish. You've told us that part of how you made your choice of who to publish was who was available, who was already taken. Now, some of the first authors you published are now celebrated authors, Jean Genet, Ionesco, Samuel Beckett. These were, I think, these were the first three authors you published, weren't they?
No, they weren't. The first author I published was Henry James.
Well,
I republished The Golden Bowl of James and another old English novel, The Monk of Matthew Lewis, and eventually worked up to Samuel Beckett and Ionesco and Jean Genet, but it took a few years. These people, though, I had learned about them, I had read things by them, I admired them, and the mainstream, so-called mainstream of American publishing, had bypassed them.
No one wanted to publish Beckett or Genet or Ionesco in the States?
No.
You must have felt really lucky to have a feel to yourself, you know, untouchables who you thought were very, very important.
I certainly did. I certainly felt that exactly that way, that it was very fortunate for me in a certain sense that these people whom I felt were amongst the greatest of the living writers of our time somehow were overlooked by the American establishment.
In 1985, you sold Grove Press to another house.
Not to another house, to a woman.
Oh, to an individual?
Yes.
Okay.
Ann Getty.
Why did you want to sell?
Well, we were always on the brink of severe financial problems. And incidentally, I didn't own Grove Press. It was, for 20 years or so, a publicly held company of which I was a minority stockholder. The biggest, but still definitely a minority. I was promised that if the Gettys came in, there would be a great deal of money made available to buy new manuscripts, books, and so on, and that I would have a contract to stay there, and it all seemed very appealing. I was wrong.
Right, you ended up leaving.
They threw me out.
So who owns the backlist now to
Grove Press and Getty?
Right, so you don't have access anymore to the books that you brought out.
Access. I can read them.
Right.
I have them. Individual copies.
I've always wondered what that feels like, you know, when you're the head of a company for a long time and then you're out of that company and works that you acquired over the years are no longer under your control.
Well, I mean, for example, Samuel Beckett remained a close friend of mine, and Ionesco, and so on. So, I mean, I like the books as much as ever, and anything I can do to help them, to continue with the books, I'm happy to do. I feel terribly disappointed personally, but certainly doesn't change my feelings about the books.
How come when you sold Grove Press, you didn't just retire?
I don't know. Why would I retire? I feel the same today as I did when I was 17. First of all, I have no money. That I have no pension. So that's again like saying what books are available amongst those you'll have to publish. What are my options? I'm going to retire to where? That's number one. Number two, I don't understand the idea of retiring. I mean, that to me is another word for death.
Do you feel strongly about the books you're publishing now?
I do.
What is it about them that makes you feel
I like strong? Them.
What are your ultimate ambitions for your new Blue Moon Press?
Well, I think that that is sort of a non-issue at the moment, because one thing leads into another. When 60% of the business you have is suddenly withdrawn, that leads into other problems, peripheral problems, people who are possible financial suppliers of money, they disappear. The printer disappears. So at this point, I'm thinking of revisiting a country I saw twice the last 2 years called Thailand.
You think of going to Thailand?
Yes.
What?
It seemed easier going there than fighting the Reverend Wildman, Walden, Dalton. I find myself without a constituency. Who is going to come to any aid here? People say, well, Walden can sell any books they want. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. But the point is, they were selling our books. They were selling them very well. They said so publicly, and then they stopped. So it's a kind of insidious kind of action that I honestly don't know what to do with. I don't know how to grapple with it. I mean, I was in the infantry with a platoon or a squad. I knew I had to go up a hill. Well, I could see the top of the hill. I don't know where to go. I'm a small businessman, entrepreneur. It doesn't quite get the same feeling as, let's say, the film Poison would get, where there's a sort of a ready-made group, where there are organizations and so forth. For a capitalist like myself to go to a foundation to say, hey, come out and fight my battle for me, is, I think, not very likely to succeed.
Barney Rossett is the former head of Grove Press and the current publisher of Blue Moon Books. We called Donald Wildman to ask him about his threatened boycott of Kmart, but we were told he was too busy to speak with us. And we called Walden Books to ask why they stopped carrying Blue Moon Books, but they didn't return our calls in time for the broadcast.